there! Thanks for listening to the Elevate Christian Church podcast. We exist as a church to connect people with God and each other. Today's message comes to us from our lead minister and preacher, Kevin Barton. We hope this inspires you, grows you, and challenges you in your faith and your walk with Jesus. Enjoy!
Good morning. My name is Kevin, and I am the preacher here. Hey, if we could just bring me down a tad, that would be wonderful. I'm the preacher here. I'd like to welcome you to our church and wish you a belated happy Valentine's Day. Maybe we could go down one more notch because I'm about to yell. I don't want to scare anybody. I want to wish you a happy belated Valentine's Day. As you are well aware of, this past Wednesday was Valentine's Day. If you're not aware of that, I will pray for you because you're probably in trouble and don't even know it. My wife, Lindy, and I did something that we never really do for Valentine's Day. This year, we actually celebrated Valentine's Day. Let me tell you why we celebrated it. It was so cute. One of my sons, and I don't ever want to embarrass my children, normally I don't, but one of my sons wanted to take his girlfriend on a Valentine's date, and so he was so cute. He had this huge plan where he wanted to take her out to dinner. We live in Carroll County. So he wanted to take her to downtown Carrollton, which is known as the Square, and it's got all these little restaurants and these little boutiques and these shops and some bookstores, and I almost said his name. And he wanted to take his girlfriend to buy her a book and then take her to dinner. He doesn't have his driver's license yet, so Lindy and I said, listen, we'll drive the two of you to the Square. We'll kind of drop you off, and we're just, we're going to hang out. It was a beautiful day, and so we dropped him off, and he got all dressed up and got flowers and got a teddy bear and all this stuff, and he took her to buy a book. She's an avid reader, his girlfriend, and then took her to this restaurant. So I said, well, honey, while we're here, you want to grab something to eat? And I thought every restaurant is just going to be overloaded. It's going to be packed. It wasn't the case. We walked right in to a restaurant called the Irish Bread Pub on the Square, sat down, and I had the best fried cod sandwich, fried fish sandwich I've ever had in my life. In fact, I now deem Valentine's Day fried cod sandwich day henceforth. And we just, had a relaxing dinner and went back out and kind of walked around and checked on them. They were still doing their thing. And so there's a brewery on the square called Local Ties, and it overlooks like a real pretty amphitheater. And so I was like, well, let's go in here. And so they have a little outdoor area. So we went to this brewery, and we each had a glass of water, and just kind of sat there and gazed into each other's eyes, and we really enjoyed each other's company. And then by then, the date was over, and we went home. Now, I said this. Let me say it again. Normally, Lindy and I do not celebrate Valentine's Day, because our mantra has always been, even from the first year we got married, is this, and I'm not saying this tongue-in-cheek, every day is Valentine's Day in the Barton household. Every day, we wake up and we make a choice to love each other. We make a choice to treat each other with kindness, with dignity, with respect. Lindy's always trying to put me first. I'm always trying to put her first, other than Jesus, right? I know that. But every day, that's kind of how we live our lives. Because here's why, and you've seen this too, I'm sure. We've all seen people who don't treat each other very well. They're married couples, right? They don't treat each other with kindness or dignity or respect. The love seems stagnant or cold or indifferent. But then all of a sudden, Valentine's Day comes, right? And we got to pull out all the stops. We got to make up for a year of neglect, a year of not being kind, a year of not showing love. And so they'll get dressed up, they'll buy chocolates or flowers, and they'll go out to a nice restaurant and they'll eat. And for that day, they actually act like they love each other. And we've all seen people like that. You know, I got to thinking about that. And I got to thinking that, you know, many evangelicals have that kind of relationship with the Lord. We know that God is love. We know that Jesus loved us. God loved us so much he sent his son. We know God's not indifferent towards us. He loves us more than anything in the world. But for many evangelicals, we don't walk in that love. We get dressed up on our Valentine's Day. It's called Sunday. We get a little dressed up. We come to church. We pretend like we love God. We say the things we're supposed to say. We sing the songs we're supposed to sing. We nod when the preacher says what we think we're supposed to nod out at. But then we go home and Monday morning rolls around and God is forgotten. We don't really walk in that love. We're starting a brand new series today called Core. And here's what we want to do. I'll go ahead and tell you up front. We want to challenge any of you who have that type of relationship with God where he's just a compartment in your life and he's not in every facet, every fiber of your being, all parts of your life. It is my hope through the prompting of the Holy Spirit to push some of you into this everyday, all day love relationship with God, to encourage you to love God from your core, from the inside out. And so we're doing this series. I actually took my Lyft group through it to kind of do a beta test run on it, and nobody left our group, so I guess we're okay. But I'm going to say a word that I don't want you to be bothered by. What we really want to do is we want to encourage you to have a more holistic approach to loving God. Back when I was going through Bible college, that word holistic was really close to the New Age movement and you weren't allowed to use it. Holistic just means loving God with every facet of your being. And we want to move you into that arena. And so here's what I would submit to you from the gate. We should love God with every fiber of our being, because whether you know it or not, God loves you with every fiber of his being. He loves you more than you can even imagine. And so we want to move into that relationship with our Heavenly Father. When we love God this way, with our core being, it changes us from the inside out, and it moves us into a fuller relationship with God, in turn, then with other people, and ultimately with ourselves. So we're going to launch this series today. We're going to kind of roll up our sleeves a little bit, and I'm going to do my best to not make this a seminary class or a Bible college class. We're going to be in Luke chapter 12 in a few minutes, but let me set the scene for you as to what's going on in Luke chapter 12. We're at a point in the ministry of Jesus where he has a massive amount of followers. So he has his disciples that are following him around. Well, in Mark chapter 12, we find Jesus with his disciples, but with a larger group that was comprised of different types of people. All right, and let me just throw some names out there. You had a group of what the Bible calls Sadducees, a group of Pharisees, and a group of scribes, all right? Now, we often refer to the Sadducees and the Pharisees as religious leaders, and yes, they were. But while that's true, I think what we lose in translation in our day and time is, yes, they were religious leaders, but they were also Israel's leading political leaders. The Sadducees and the Pharisees were on different ends of the spectrum. So I'm going to try to put anyone to sleep here, but you hear about the Sadducees and the Pharisees all the time in the Bible, so we should know what the Bible's talking about, right? Yes, okay. So let me tell you about the Sadducees. The Sadducees were considered the conservative political leaders. So they were on the right. The Sadducees watched Fox News. That was their channel. They were very, very conservative. In the time of Jesus, the Sadducees were more elitists. They were aristocratic. The Sadducees were known to be very wealthy. They owned large tracts of land, and they held very powerful positions in the government of Israel. You've heard of the temple, where Jesus would go to the temple and the Jews would go to the temple. The Sadducees are the ones that actually controlled the temple. And their political beliefs allowed them to align themselves a little bit with the Roman occupation and the Roman Caesar, and they were a little more friendly to Rome. Now, the Sadducees believed only in the Torah. That's the first five books of the Bible. And not only did they just believe in that, they only believed in the written form. So no oral traditions were passed down. If it wasn't written, there was no commentary on it. It was black and white, and that's the only thing they followed. Now, a few weird things about this group, the Sadducees, is they did not believe in the resurrection from the dead. Right, Paul talks about us rising one day, our bodies to meet our souls in the eye. They didn't believe in the resurrection of the dead. In fact, they didn't really believe in the spiritual realm. They believed when you died, you died. From dust you were formed, and dust you shall return. You were worm dirt. That was it. So there was no afterlife. So here's a really easy way to remember it. The Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe in heaven. They didn't believe in the afterlife. So there was really no hope. And that's just sad, you see. Sadducees, all right? That's one group. You don't have to clap for that. I got something better than that, I hope. All right. Then you had another group of religious leaders and political leaders called the Pharisees. So the Pharisees would be considered the more liberal political leaders. So they didn't watch Fox, they watched CNN, right? Socially, the Pharisees were kind of upper middle class, and they were kind of more of a representation of the common working people. They had a little more respect from the masses. So the Sadducees controlled the temple. The Pharisees controlled what were called synagogues. All right, and so that's why Jesus brushes up against them more, because he'd go into a town, a synagogue, in modern day form would be the local church. All right, and they kind of controlled the synagogues. The Pharisees taught there was a resurrection from the dead. There was a spiritual world. There was an afterlife. There was a battle between angels and demons and spirits. All right, so they believed in all that. But the problem with the Pharisees is this. They added to God's law. They added to the Torah. They began to legislate laws and rules. So they had this oral translation of the Bible passed down. So let me give you an example, because God says to honor the Sabbath day, right? And so the Sadducee says, all right, it's black and white. We're going to honor the Sabbath day, whatever that looks like. No, the Pharisee says, well, wait a minute. You know, we need to get a committee together, a subcommittee, and we need to legislate what that looks like. How do we honor the Sabbath? And so they came with these crazy rules that no one can follow. Like, all right, so here's what it means. God says honor the Sabbath, but we're going to add our input in it. That means you can only walk so many steps. And if you walk one more step than allowed, then you've broken the law. That means you can only lift so much weight. You can only do these things. And so they begin to systematically add rules and regulations. All right, other than God's law, do you know how many laws the Pharisees added? 613 man-made laws. And these laws were meant to repress and hold people down. Yeah, I mean, no matter what you did, you found yourself always breaking the law, always feeling guilty, always having to sacrifice because you broke the law, because you forgot about all the man-made laws. They weren't God's laws. They were the Pharisees' laws. And so a great way to remember the Pharisees is that wasn't fair, you see? Okay, So Sadducees and the Pharisees, and one more group that was with Jesus in this encounter in Mark 12 was a group, and you may have heard this, it's all through the New Testament, a group of people called scribes. Scribes had no distinct religious sect. They, like the Pharisees or the Sadducees, they were more of a profession. They were experts on the laws of Moses. So basically, essentially, we would call them lawyers, and they applied those laws to everyday life. So they handled contract negotiations, they resolved disputes, and they provided a legal service interpreting the Torah, God's law, to the community. So here's the scene, all right? You have Jesus with his disciples in a room full of politicians and lawyers. What could possibly go wrong, right? Right? It's like my worst nightmare. All right, so in Mark chapter 12, where we're going to land, Jesus is with these, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the lawyers, and they are chatting it up. Now, Mark, in his narrative, when he writes, he tells us that these people came to Jesus with an agenda. They wanted to pelt him with questions on God's law because they were trying to trip him up. They were trying to trap him. So it really wasn't a conversation more than it was an inquisition. And so they're questioning Jesus about the law, and they're trying to trip him up, and they're trying to shame him, and they're trying to trap him. But the great thing about Jesus is he's God. He knows everything. He's all wise. And so they'd ask him a question. He'd answer it. It'd blow their mind, and he'd be like, next question. Ask him another question. Next question. All right, and they begin to become amazed. Well, in Mark chapter 12, there's a scribe, a lawyer, that's there. He's hearing Jesus defend and answer, and he's amazed. And we're going to pick up in Mark chapter 12, starting in verse 28. Okay? It says this, and one of the scribes came up to him, to Jesus, heard them disputing with one another, and seeing that Jesus, he answered them well, he asked him, which commandment is most important of all? See, I don't think he had an agenda. I think he was there, and he began to kind of be like, this guy's different. And so it prompted a question in his heart. And he's asking Jesus, Jesus, when you boil everything down in this world, in this life, in the law of Moses, and if you were to put it into one commandment, what would that commandment be? Verse 29, and Jesus answered, the most important one is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And then he adds a second one. It's like, I know you didn't ask me what the second one is, but the second one is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There are no other commandment greater than these. And so Jesus answers the question with what the Jewish community calls the Shema. The Shema is a prayer they say every morning and every night, and that's to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. Now, where we want to go today, just to kind of set the stage for the next 4 weeks, is in the answer Jesus gave him. Like, just imagine if, someone came to you and said, well, you're a Christian. What's the most important thing? If you were to boil down what's most important in the Christian community, what would it be? What would your answer be? Love. Love. That's all that really matters. You remember what Paul says, when all things pass away, one thing remains in 1 Corinthians? Love. And so in the answer, we find Jesus shows us three love relationships that all of us have. And that's what we want to do today. We kind of want to go through those. All three of these relationships, I believe, are tied together. You can't really have one without the other to reach your full potential. And so let's look at the three love relationships that Jesus mentions in his answers to what's the most important commandment? What's the most important thing about being a Christian? Number one, we find in verse 30, and the first relationship is love for God. Love for God. And see, look at verse 30. And you shall love the Lord your God. You shall love the Lord your God. He mentions God first with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. Okay, so Jesus says, listen, we're to love God, but here are four ways or four areas of our lives that we're to love God with. And we're going to talk about these over the next month. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on them today. I just want to systematically go down through them to kind of prime you for the next few weeks. He says, you're to love God with all your heart. What he means by that is we all are emotional beings. We all have the ability to have joy and sadness and cry and laugh and dance. And so what he's saying is, with all of your emotions, love God. He says, you are to love God with all of your soul. We know our bodies are temporary, but our souls are eternal. He's saying, listen, so not only emotionally, but also spiritually. You're to love God with all your emotions. You're to love God spiritually. He says all your mind. That's loving God intellectually. That's that has to do with what we allow in our mind, that's with our thinking, the way we think. You know, we're told when we become Christians, our minds are renewed, they're transformed. And so on an intellectual level, we're also to love God. And then with all of your strength, all of your physicality, all of your energy, you are to love God. So we love God, Jesus says, with every part of our being, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, and physically. And if one of those components is missing, we're not loving God to our full potential, and that handicaps us to love other people to that full potential. Does that make sense to you? I hope so. All right. So I was reading a story about a lady named Joni Erickson. She got in a car accident, and she became crippled and was in a wheelchair. And despite her physical limitations, she was an accomplished author and artist. And several years ago, she tells a story when she married her husband. His name was Ken. And for her wedding, she had planned to come down the center aisle in a motorized wheelchair, right? Well, just before her grand entrance, she was at the doors. She realized that in her wheelchair, she had run over her dress and tore it, and there was a grease spot in it. Somebody had placed flowers in her hands. She wasn't really able to use her hands either. And so the flowers had kind of shifted and were kind of wedged between the wheelchair and her leg. And she was so upset. She had a greasy, torn dress. The flowers weren't right. But there she was, and they opened the door, right? And there was her grand entrance. And she said the first thing she did is she looked up and she saw her husband-to-be, Ken, there. She said, and when I saw him, I'm going to quote her, quote, once I saw Ken's face, all I could do was think of him. Everything else, the people in the church, the flowers that were a little askew on my lap, the fact that my dress was torn and greasy, all of that paled in comparison to when I saw Ken. You see, friends, when we encounter God in the way that God wants us to encounter him, when we see him and we see his love and his sacrifice and his grace and his mercy and his justice and his truth and his majesty, everything else pales in comparison to him. I came to God crippled by my sin. I came to God bent over in iniquity. But then I saw God and everything changed. So we're going to get into that starting next week, all the facets on how we're to love God with every fiber of our being. So that's the first love relationship. And let me just say this, because I'm a preacher and I have to say this. If your relationship with God is not intact or it is off kilter, every other relationship you have in your life is not going to reach its full potential. It's just not going to. All right, so that's the first love relationship. The second love relationship is, and I think Jesus did this on purpose. He said, you asked for the greatest, but I'm gonna go ahead and give you the second greatest. The second love relationship we all have is love for your neighbor. Love for your neighbor. All of these are connected. Look at verse 31. The second one is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. When Lindy and I first got married, we had a little starter house. It was a little three-bedroom house, and it was a cute, cozy little place. But I'm going to be honest with you, we did not like our neighbors. We had some really, really bad experiences, obnoxious neighbors. I always pray to God when our family gets bigger, I'm going to move, but right now, here's where you got me. I'm going to do my best to love them. But you ever tried to love someone and it's just really hard? So we had this one neighbor that lived on beside us, and they bought a puppy, and they decided to just tie the puppy up in their backyard, no doghouse, nothing, and like it was freezing cold, and the puppy would howl all night long, and the puppy was like from me to that front row of my bedroom window. It was just right out there, and I tried to be like, hey, you know, can I build you a doghouse? Your dog is just howling all night long. And she's like, hey, don't you tell me about my dog. You get off my, you know, it was one of those types of situations. They had loud parties and they were just, you know, not great, great neighbors. On the other side, we just had weird, like really weird neighbors. Like really, really weird. I was a young man then. I used to be, and so Lindy and I got married. We didn't have any kids yet. She was pregnant with our first daughter, Reagan, and I get up here during football season and rant and rave and have fun with you, but football is not my passion. My passion is basketball, but I don't do that because I'm the only one in Atlanta that even cares about the NBA. So during the playoff, basketball playoffs, that's my jam. That's when I just like am into it. And in my younger years, I was very vocal. I like to scream at the TV. I like to scream at the refs. I like to scream, that's a bad call. And so one night, I'm watching a game, and it was a super intense game. And I was doing all the things. Come on! Are you kidding me? That's terrible! And I am just screaming at the TV, and Lindy's just over there. She's watching me. It's more interesting than watching the game and just shaking her head. And so we go to bed, and I get up and go to work the next day. And the neighbor, the lady comes over and knocks on the door. Tap, 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 tap. Lindy answers the door, and she's like, hey, I just want you to know I'm praying for you. And he's like, well, thank you. Thank you. She said, well, I heard him screaming at you all night long. And you don't have to put up with that. Like, and Lee's like, what are you talking about? And so from that point on, even though Lee's like, she didn't scream at me. He's yelling at the basketball game. He's an idiot, but he wasn't screaming at me. He's not at the game. But from that point on, it just got really weird. And I would come home and they'd be like, you know, and so we just, any story you have about bad neighbors, I can beat it. So we started having all these babies, and we needed a bigger house. And so we started looking, you know, to find a new house. And my mantra was, I don't care really where we live. I just want good neighbors. I mean, I want normal, non-weird, no busybodies, no partiers, or, you know, cruelty to animals or yelling at me, just normal, please God. And so we moved into South Paulding. We lived in this house for 15 years. And God answered that prayer. Man, we moved in and we had the most incredible neighbors you can imagine. We had two kids and Lindy was pregnant with the third. Our neighbors, We had two kids. Well, she wasn't pregnant yet. That came later. She had two kids. Our neighbors had a kid and was just about to give birth to their second. Lindy and our neighbor Ashley, they got pregnant at the same time. And so we had four kids at that point, and they had four kids. Let me show you a picture here if we've got it. That's my four kids and their four kids on my fence tearing it up, but I didn't care. And it was just this beautiful, beautiful relationship. And so we had them, and there was a house, a brand new house that they were building, and it got done. And I prayed again, Lord, please send us some good neighbors. Well, a young man bought the house, and my first thought was great. He had he was all decked out in Georgia Tech gear. And I was like, oh, he's single. He's going to throw a bunch of parties with his frat buddies. And it's going to be awful. But he was engaged and he got married. His name was Bart. And he married a girl named Lauren. Bart and Lauren actually attend Elevate here. They're members of our church. Great, great people. Lindy got pregnant again and Lauren got pregnant. So now every kid had like a friend and a buddy. And we were in the middle of these two couples. And you ever been in the golden years and you didn't really know you were in the golden years until they're over? Man, those were the golden years for us. We were the central location. And so at nights, the ladies would come out and they'd be talking and the guys, we'd be talking. The kids would be playing. They'd watch our kids. We'd watch their kids. Hey, we're going to go up to Kroger. Can you keep an eye on the kids? Just always there for each other. And it was just so, so beautiful. Well, then one family moved away to Tennessee, and Bart and Lauren moved over to Cobb County, and we finally moved away. But, I've had good and bad neighbors, and I think we all have. But the question that I want to ask you is this, because there's a lot of debate over these words, love your neighbor. And the debate is always this: who is my neighbor? What does Jesus mean, love your neighbor? Is that people in my cul-de-sac? Is that people right beside me? Is that just people I work with? Is that just the people I like? Or is that people I don't like? Who is my neighbor? And you can Google it, and you can probably get 100 different answers or interpretations to what it means when Jesus says, love your neighbor. So I'm going to give you my definition. And right, this is super complicated. It is earth shattering. So, go get your pen out and get ready. Here's my definition of who your neighbor is. You ready? Anyone who is not you. That's your neighbor. Anyone who is not you. So when Jesus says to love your neighbor, he means to love anyone who is not you. Hear me. Even the difficult, weird ones. Anyone that we come in contact with at the restaurant, at Walmart, at work, at school, anywhere, anyone that is not you is your neighbor. And Jesus said, love them. Last week we did a sermon on Super Bowl commercials, and it was fun. It's kind of out of my comfort zone to do something like that, but we had a good time. And so when I went home to watch the Super Bowl, by the way, wasn't that a great game? Yeah, it was really good. All right, unless you're a 49ers fan. So we were watching, I was really paying attention to like the commercials this year more than ever. And my favorite one was the Dunkin' commercial with Ben Affleck. I thought it was funny. But there was a commercial that came on, and I thought it was a good commercial, but in like the Christian church preacher world that I sometimes am stuck in, this commercial caused so much controversy. So let me say, I'm going to sound like an old curmudgeon here. I don't have social media. I'm not against social media, but social media just depletes my spirit. It just drains me. But so this commercial, Lindy was on her social media, and I have to remind her sometimes, hey, I'm not on social media, so don't read me your social media. Anyway, but it was a commercial, where it's a company called Jesus Gets Us. And in the commercial, you just have people washing people's feet, right? I don't know if you remember that commercial, but let me show you the image that caused controversy here. It's an image of a young girl outside of an abortion clinic, right? And a young lady puts her sign down to come over and to wash her feet. And the things that Christian people were saying, about this just really saddened me. There was brimstone in their voice. There was hate. You know, this is just, you're endorsing abortion. I don't view it that way. Let me ask you a question. That young girl, is she going to be shown the love of Christ more by people holding signs, screaming at her, telling her she's going to hell, that there's no hope for her? Or is she going to know and experience the love of Jesus if somebody comes and washes her feet and looks her in the eyes and says, I know you're scared. I know you're confused. I know that none of this makes sense. And I know you feel like you have no hope. You're here alone. I can see that. But I just want you to know God loves you. God has a purpose for you. And if you would let him, God has a purpose for that child inside of you. And I want you to know that I love you. Which one is showing love to their neighbor more? In one of those comments, someone said, Jesus would never wash the feet of sinners. Okay. Well, why bother coming to church? have you read about his disciples? And I wanted to, but I didn't. I was like, I was almost told, like, type this. But I was like, nope. But I'm reminded that Jesus also washed the feet of Judas, the betrayer. The very man that sold him out. Jesus washed him, looked him in the eye, and I believe Jesus loved him. And so Jesus instructs us to love our neighbors. I think we all need to be reminded of John 13:35, which says this, by this, all people will know you are my disciples if you have love for one another. So relationship one, love God. We're going to get into the details of that for 4 weeks. Relationship number two, love your neighbor. And then relationship number three, here's the third relationship we all have to deal with. Love yourself. Look at verse 31 again. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, let me tell you something. We use the English Standard Version translation here. It's because it's the version I like. We are not a church that tells you what version you should read, and this is the only word of God, this, that, or the other. I like it because I feel like it stays truer to the Greek and the Hebrew, but they missed the mark on this one because some of your translations are going to give you the full verse, which says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And so that third relationship is the most complicated relationship we all have, most of us, trying to love ourselves. You see, people can't love other people to their fullest capability if they don't love themselves. So let me give you a little history here. Man, I was a child that had, bottom basement self-esteem. I had the worst self-image, self-esteem issues. We were poor. My clothes didn't fit. I was a foot taller than everybody in my class, right? And so my posture was this, right? And then middle school hit, and puberty hit, and pimples came. And my face got all broken out, and I grew even taller. And so here was my posture. In middle school, I hated myself. I'd get my books, and I'd walk like this. I would make no eye contact with anybody. I just wanted to get from one class to the other, to the other, to the bus, to home, because I just did not like myself. I didn't like the way I looked. I didn't like my personality. I mean, I was the lowest of low. You know, a lot of Christians walk around that way, don't they? They think so lowly of themselves that they posture themselves to avoid people. Listen, if we can't look at people, we can't love people. If we don't make eye contact and smile, we can never interact with people. And so people who have low self-image causes them to do that. Or the other end of the spectrum, right? A person with low self-image, they don't do that. They just lash out at everybody. They become mean. They're hard to deal with. That's their defense mechanism. You've heard it said, hurt people. I love what Gary Smalley says. He says, listen, you cannot love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. And he's right. You know, and so here I was, this middle school kid, and even into high school, just my posture was like this. Then I found Jesus. That was my first love. And then I found basketball and I excelled. And my posture went from this to, I wasn't like George Jefferson it down the hallway, but I was confident in who I was. I began to love myself more. It made me a better friend. It made me a better son. It made me a better grandson. It made me a better student. It just made me a better person. I feel like this is an area that people struggle with the most in these relationships. Your own worst enemy is yourself, right? It's hard to love ourselves. I want to read a proverb to you, Proverbs 19:8. It says this, whoever gets sense, another way to say that is a wise man, whoever gets sense loves what? His own soul. This isn't in a narcissistic way. Is that what he's talking about? Like, look at me, I'm awesome. It's, hey, I'm a child of God. I was fearfully and wonderfully made. I matter to Jesus. I have hope. I have purpose. I'm going to be okay. You see, when all of these are intertwined, loving God, loving our neighbor, loving ourselves, it's like a love triangle, man. And if one side gets out of whack, it's not a triangle and it loses its stability. Right? So if you don't love yourself, you can't really love your neighbor. Or if you don't understand God's love for you, you're not going to fully love yourself. Or if you don't love your neighbor, then you're not fully loving God because he commands us to love our neighbor. See, we have this misrepresented view of God and his love. A lot of people have this view of, I've got such a low self-esteem. I am trash. God is always mad at me. There's nothing I can do right. He could never love me after all I've done, or I've got this issue I can't handle. And when we do that, we can't love him fully and we can't love those around us. But if we can begin to love God from our core, from every fiber of our being, it will instill in us a love for his people and the confidence we need to be comfortable in our own skins. So the month of January, I wish I could like just rewind, because the month of January was horrible for my family. I feel like we got sick after Christmas and over it last week. Like the month, I'm exaggerating, but the month of January, so we had every sickness you could have, right? I feel like we had COVID. I think we had the flu. I think we had flu B. I think we had the stomach bug, right? And so when I'm around you and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm feeling a little sick. I was like, I don't care. I've had it all. Like, give me a drink of what you're drinking. I don't care. My immune system. So we were just really, really sick. And there was a period for about 5 days when I was just really sick, high fever. And the only thing I could do was either lay in my bed or lay on the recliner and watch TV. That was it, and sleep. All right. And so I started watching this TV show, y'all. And for a preacher to watch this is probably not the best thing. I don't know. But I love it. I think it's on the History Channel or Discovery. It's one of those. It's a show called Moonshiners. And it's these people in Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee that make moonshine. They're really not making moonshine. They're just showing you how. But so I started watching the last season. Season 13 is what it's in. And I was watching that through the marathon. I was like, oh, this show is pretty good. So I watched the last season first. So I said, well, I'm going to watch this. So that was season 13. Then I watched season 12. I watched that all the way through. And I was like, oh, that's why that person's doing that. Because then, yeah, I missed that. And then I watched season 11. And then I watched season 10. And so I'm watching the show backwards. And my wife's like, how do you do that? Like how it was like reading a book backwards. And I was like, I don't know. That's just how my mind works. And she says, you know, I'm kind of backwards. She goes, she didn't assure me. She said, yeah, that's true. Right. And so I'm watching, I'm like in season 8 now. I'm watching the show backwards. And that's kind of the way my mind works. Here's what I would say to you. Some Christians need to pick up their Bibles and you need to start reading it backwards. You need to start reading it from the end to the beginning, not the beginning to the end. You need to read and understand that Jesus is victorious. That it doesn't matter who's in the White House, it matters who's on the throne. It doesn't matter if Travis loves Kelsey or Kelsey loves Travis or you love tacos. Do you love Jesus? It doesn't matter where you've been, what you've done. When you read it from the back and you understand that there is victory in Jesus, that Jesus defeated the grave and death and sin and disease and destruction and the devil, and he defeated it all with love. And what drove him to defeat it was his unconditional, undying love for you. Specifically, even when you don't think you deserve it, even when your self-image is shot, Jesus said, no, 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 come on, come to me. I know your soul's tired. I know you're heavy burden. I know you're laden down, but come to me and find rest, and I will restore and replenish your soul. You see, Jesus loved you with every fiber of his being. He loved you from his core. And he's calling us to love him with his core. Not because he's an egomaniac, but because he knows when we love him fully and completely with every fiber of our being, it is our life that begins to transform. And then when our life begins to transform, we can then begin to transform the lives the people we love around us. So I want to challenge you today and for the next 4 weeks, love God with your core.
We hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast today. If you'd like to learn more about Elevate or partner with us in what God is doing here, check out our website at elevatecc.com. Until next time, God bless you and thanks again.